There is no water conservation without water conservation.
Hello and welcome to Between Us, Make Every Conversation Count. And in today's conversation, I have with me the pleasure of Dr. Mansi Bal Bhargava. If I were to take the liberty to introduce you, ma'am, the biodata says a transdisciplinary expert in building environment and advanced degrees from CEPT University, University of Cambridge, Erasmus University Rotterdam, and a plethora of prestigious scholarship and fellowships. Dr. Bhargava brings a wealth of knowledge and passion to our discussion today, and I'm really looking forward to this discussion on our podcast. Mansi ma'am, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Santosh. I was a bit worried what I'm going to speak to you about. After you actually gave me those pointers, the way we are going to look at, I'm really relieved that you are going to let me speak my heart. So I'm looking forward to this conversation, to be honest.
We will begin this podcast with a brief introduction to water management, and then we move ahead with the different segments of our podcast, which I'll introduce during the course of our conversation. First things first, just quickly, ma'am, if you could, talk about your professional journey and a little bit about water management currently in India. You know, the challenges, the opportunities in the field, and, you know, some insights. And I'm sure as we progress through the segments, it'll be a lot easier to understand. But, you know, quickly, the current state of water management, your personal and professional journey.
So I'll take the current state of water management because that will help me to explain the latter one. Thank you. We have really good water state of affairs, to be optimistic about it. But the pessimistic side of it is we are also really dwelling into a serious water crisis. We talk about water crisis, I mean all the three, flood, drought, and access to water to the vulnerable community. We have also experienced day zero, starting with Chennai, and Niti Aayog has already given a list of cities where day zero is at the doorstep, so knocking at our communities. So having said that, I think the more the crisis, in a very sadistic way, the more the opportunities for water workers. So I'm trying to find my way. Where can I contribute a little bit, first to change myself and then to bring a change in the water narratives, a change in the water conversations. You know, because for long, water management was an engineered management approach. And it's only recent that we are getting into water management as a social, ecological, and technical approach, the engineering approach. So we are already in a transition in water management, and some of us are trying to dwell in that area. And I'm still looking for good work, a work in progress. So if you have anything for me to teach or about water, if you have any research which you think you can collaborate, I'm very happy to join hands with people, because water management is a collective effort. I do not see that I'm working solo in any water practices. So some research are going on, some education work is going on, and also running the water conversation series through W4W Foundation. So I think I have to continue doing this for, I don't know, until my last breath or until my hands and heads are, and the heart are in good shape. I will keep doing what I'm currently doing. So, and I think hands are full in that way. And more the crisis, we need more people. And I'm giving a shout to all the people out here. Please come and join us, because we have really shortage of people as we have shortage of water. It's going hand in hand. But having said that, still work opportunities are less. And the Porter theory applies here. Because there are not many water experts or water workers, it is still not seen as a profession. So we suffer from that part as well. So we are constantly in search of work.
Well, ma'am, I think we are going to have some really interesting conversations as we move forward with our different segments. To me, the most important segment of the three segments we have in our podcast, and that is What Matters. And when we talk about what matters, I would like to first begin with your personal narrative, your personal stories around water. So can you share a personal story that illustrates the importance of water in your life?
I think a very touching question, to be honest. For me, the realization that I am water. And it's a long-standing realization I have. And that I am a bag of wastewater and I have to constantly cleanse it to keep myself afloat. And I think this realization keeps me going also, you know, and work in progress, I would like to call it. And it's not that any particular moment, but for a long time, this feeling has been there that there is a water outside which is dirty and I wish to do something about it. And I'm trying to do a little bit of from my own humanly possible end. And also at the same time, I have to change myself. And for me, that's the project. I will say water matters. So if I matter, which means water matters.
So true. So true. There is a constant interplay between water management and climate change. Because climate change is, there is no denial that it's affecting water resources and water availability. And I think one of the things is, which is where it impacts the most is urban planning. We need to have a smarter way to integrate climate resilience into urban planning so that the impact on water resources is minimal. How do we do that? And B, can international collaborations with institutions, countries, communities help in addressing these challenges?
Wonderful question. First of all, the acceptance that climate change is manifested through water crisis. Because for a long time, it was, limited to understanding greenhouse gas emissions, you know. So much of the work on climate change is still geared towards that. But so mitigation, climate change mitigation is considered more, I think it has more impetus. But the fact that the climate change adaptation means we have to work on the water systems. Because how do we understand that there is climate change happening? Sea level rise, monsoons coming in a very erratic manner, right? A drought, so desertification of land, because groundwater is taken away, so India 70% land is now in the serious desertification threat, just to give an example. Then freshwater supply is reducing. So funny thing is the climate change is manifested through water as much as it is manifested through greenhouse and gas. So in those situations, yes, resilience is extremely important as an idea to work upon. And there are a lot of efforts going on, which is, I think, a status update from sustainability, because for nearly three decades, we worked on sustainability of human habitation. And now we are working on resilience, where we talk about resilience of an individual, resilience of a household, resilience of community, resilience of city. So we are already talking of four levels of resilience, and each one requires equal attention because this is interdependent resilience. If a community is resilient, the city will be resilient and vice versa, So urban planning and even all rural planning for that matter, planning as a approach is extremely instrumental and crucial in that sense to change the way resilience can be built. And classic example is making cities flood-proof. We have failed terribly in dealing with flood, you know, and flood is disaster. But at the same time, we have to also deal with drought, you know. So if resilience building has to work, it has to work both on flood and drought. And the third resilience building, which is still not looked upon, which is more social political, that's access to fresh water. So three aspects of water one has to majorly look upon. Now, you know, and access to fresh water is a political social matter. Who gets how much? And we have a discriminating society, you know. So, and that is a bigger problem, by the way, than the flood and drought, you know. Because you see, in flood, you have water everywhere, but there is not enough water to drink kind of situation. And in drought, of course, you do not have water at all. So resilience building has to happen definitely at community level first. Because community will then work on build. So it's a I will say bridge between individuals and the city. And looking at city and talking about resilience is like, you know, it's like a monster or a big elephant to handle. So it is better to democratize resilience and work at a scale which is doable, because eventually the doers are human beings. Human beings are polluters, and human beings have to also solve the problem, you know. So community scale or community resilience is a perfect way to really enter there. And I think this is where the resilience approach or policy has to democratize itself, rather than making big plans to change city and all. And each small neighborhood, let's say, or community scale. Santosh, interestingly, in the tropical landscape of India has lakes and ponds at every few kilometers. Our design of the landscape is like that, which is, you know, embedded with the waterscape. So if every neighborhood can have its own little pond, green area, play area, relief area, you're already talking about sponge area, which is a new concept now coming up as resilience. If we are already talking about these things, we are already talking about provision of, you know, better fresh water, groundwater recharge, fresh air. We're talking about more biodiversity. So I think resilience has to dwell there. Many small projects of community resilience can make a bigger project vis-a-vis a very top-down approach of putting resilience in one place. And urban planning can also help, or planning for that matter, again, sorry for the correction, can really take that scale and rethink and rework on the way we did planning in the past. We can redo many a things at this point in time at that scale, not at a city scale, you know. Reclaim our public spaces, reclaim our green spaces, reclaim our water bodies, and bring them to their restore to their ecosystem shape. That will be helpful.
We spoke about sustainable urban planning.
Blue infrastructure also.
Blue infrastructure also. How do we retrofit existing urban areas to be more water efficient and environment friendly? And the second part to that question is, what innovative design strategies have you seen in through your experiences that effectively balance development and ecological conservation?
Oh, wonderful question, huh? So I think the first part I'll take that way. It's definitely possible to really fix things the way we are as of today. But importantly, we have to really look at it, whether people are informed about it. So if you want to implement a policy, people have to know. Corona, classic example. Wear your mask. Do this. Because if you want to go for water conservation approach at a city level or community level, people need to be informed about it so that they can make their own contribution. Every individual has to contribute. Otherwise, policies are normative documents. We have to understand this. And written it with a very good intent. Having very good content to bring a positive change in the society, to bring out, to address the problems in the society. So no issues with the policy documents. It's the implementation that gets challenged because of the language communication between the policy implementation and the community understanding the policy. So that has to be really fixed by some people. And I think transdisciplinary scholars have to fix that. I don't know who is going to do it, but that has to be done. So there are many good case examples around the world. And I would like to quote an example from my personal experience of going to Kasimigaura in Japan. So we were there in this 3-day conference and happily drinking bottled water and, you know, doing all conference activities. And on the second day, end of the day, we were taken to a plant and taken to a beautiful lake. And a plant next to the lake, and then we were told that the water which we were flushing in our hotel and conference gets, treated in this lake and then goes further for further treatment to make it potable. So ecosystem treatment at the lake, and then gets into the industry, and the water is further treated for making it potable, and the bottle was in our hand, and the same bottle was in the industry. You know, so if they had not told us, we were fine drinking that water. But once they told, once we saw it, it's not that I was taken aback by my cultural reservations, because being in that field, you know, I felt proud, to be honest, that there is a technological advancement where we have this possibility that we can bring a circular water system in our community and city, you know. And same very good example is New Water of Singapore. So we have to look at circular water not only technically, but philosophically also. It's one planet. It has the same water. And we are talking about only 0.3% of the total water available, which is for available for us to consume. 0.3% Santosh in rivers and lakes and ponds and streams and, you know, fountains and all those things. Only 0.3%, and it should not be a big problem. So we have examples where people have, we have good examples even in India as well. I mean, Aroville is a classic example where they are trying to, recycle and reuse as much as possible. So many of these examples, there are a lot of things to learn about. Personally, I cling on to reducing consumption of fresh water, you know, and consumption of any good for that matter.
Education of ecological sensitivity and the role of, educational institutions, educational programs, curriculums based on sustainability and water management, and schools and universities. And I think the first school is your home. Right. One of the things I've always felt is that when we are trying to bring about a change, the best way to do that is to integrate our personal and practical experiences along with research opportunities out there into environmental education. So your practical personal experiences and research opportunities. So my question to you would be, how do educators like you, because you're an educator yourself, incorporate hands-on ecological research projects into teaching? Because I think hands-on ecological research will really help when it comes to, you know, projects around sustainability. And are there successful models of environmental education globally which our institutions can emulate?
Oh, a very good question. I don't know how educators in the country really take me as educator. I don't know. I am at a crossroad where the practitioners do not consider me enough as practitioners and educators do not consider me enough as educator. So that's a disadvantaged position if you look at it from a livelihood point of view. But I feel that's an advantaged position for me to really flow through the systems of practice and education. And if people have to really teach water in a certain manner, there are wonderful examples of water classrooms. I know one of my friend, Professor Sara Ahmad, is running water classrooms for children. You know, it's a very well-designed, thoroughly designed water course for children. Likewise, there are very few institutes in the country that are teaching about water. I also have had an opportunity to teach water a few times. I taught circular water at NID, NIDs, couple of NIDs together. Then teaching water governance, water conflict and management at TERISAS, then water research at TIS Hyderabad. So there are possibilities, but I think they are not enough. So water education is instrumental to bring a change, but it is not happening at the pace of water crisis. My concern lies there. So people like me are really finding it difficult to find water education possibilities. But given that situation, whatever water education the few of my acquaintances are undertaking, I think they are doing tremendous effort to really get things across to the younger generation, even getting things across to their peer group. Because mind you, Santosh, we have to keep reminding ourselves that we are not trained water practitioners, not trained water professionals, not water experts. We are learning by doing. We are learning from peer group, We are learning from youth. We are learning from children. And we are trying to see how to make the education more effective, So it's definitely a work in progress. You may hear this word many a times too from me. Because society is in a transition to handle water crisis. Society is in a transition to talk about water management. And water management is only getting talked about because the crisis is rising. So it's a situation where we are pushed to think about water. Because water is a fundamental right of people, but that fundamental right also gave us the liberty to exploit water to the unlimited end.
Wonderful, Mansi ma'am. So there are multiple other segments to look forward to. With this, we come to the end of our first segment, What Matters. So we now move to the second segment, What's Brewing? Basically, I want to talk about the first thing I want you to ask you is what future projects or innovations you are most excited about, especially in the field of water management?
Oh, I think million word question, huh? If we can find out a way to stop rich people using more water, I don't know how. You know, my response will be very, very unorthodox, let me tell you. For the reason that I'm really looking at water management from people management perspective, not from the water management perspective. But technically, if you ask me that question, if you had made this segment, I will say that people, that the acceptance for people to really use wastewater as their drinking water. I mean, that will be really the day when anyway we will reduce our water consumption, knowing that it is coming as a circular water. And it is not far, by the way. I mean, there are many places in the world who are trying. India will take more time for social cultural reasons.
As a matter of fact, man, if you were to look at India, we should take a lot less time because we are so much connected with nature. And the appreciation and the awareness and the conversation around water should happen more here than any other part of the world.
Absolutely.
I think as a culture, we are so connected to nature. Our connection to nature as a civilization. Isliye to hum Mother Earth kehte hain. And I know that you don't really look at Matrix, at least that's what I feel. Even then, if I were to ask you a little bit around trends, future trends. What kind of trends do you see in water management that we should probably watch out for the next decades?
Okay, I'll take the first part where you were describing about it to bring on record to people here that the mention of water management in human civilization actually came from our literature, from Vedas. And to give a reference of Rig Veda mm-hmm. Samhita, where they really talk about what we know as sustainable development goals. So it Vedas asks us to preserve water for future mm-hmm. generation, because water, they give lot of, you know, points from Ved Samhita and, you know, all different Veds, you know, Taittiriya Samhita and Atharva Ved and so many Samhitas, basically many mm-hmm. Points. So water management as a mm-hmm. discourse is not new in India. So just to, as you mentioned, and so I want to echo that, bringing a historical evidence. So it's mm-hmm. not new for us. So we should be able to embrace it much faster than any other mm-hmm. civilization. The first mention of rainwater harvesting is also in Vedas mm-hmm. ever, mm-hmm. ever. So we have mm-hmm. the heritage. We have that, I will say, sensitiveness, mm-hmm. let me put it that way. And I think then the technology becomes a very instrumental mm-hmm. tool to really add on to our mm-hmm. inheritance of understanding of water. It's only in India, I think, where we yes. worship water. So now it is just that a matter of how we add mm-hmm. things here. So I think your question was on what today, you know, what are the technologies today? Is that key trends? Okay. Oh, that's where I have some serious reservations on mm-hmm. the key trends. It's just like, you know, let me give an example of directly of water. So there are a lot of trends on wastewater mm-hmm. recycling. A cure mm-hmm. approach, technological approach, a nature-based solution, bioremediation, this, I mean, mm-hmm. many. And I want to give an example. Analogy of plastic here. So plastic recycling is happening, waste recycling is happening. Now these trends do not really embed to stress upon production of lesser mm. of wastewater, lesser mm. of plastic, lesser of solid waste. So what my worry is, if that is not brought as a disclaimer mm-hmm. first, and if we continuously work on mm-hmm. cure approach, we are doomed.
Okay.
Because if we appreciate, you know, this plastic recycled furniture, this and that, very good. We have to do it. But the same people, the same trendsetters have to first of all say, please do not produce mm-hmm. plastic. Please do not produce waste. Because this is produced, we are obliged to do it. Likewise, please do not produce wastewater much, because it increases the load mm. on energy, it increases the load on work. But what is happening, unfortunately, is if you set up your business mm. like that, if you set up your approach like that, which means you need mm. more produce, you need more waste, you need more product to produce that. So I think they have to take the moral responsibility, and the trend is mm. yet to come. That putting that as a disclaimer, that we have taken a cure approach, but parallelly we have to take the preventive approach. I may not be doing it, but I can always collaborate mm. with, please, or I should take up both the mm. arms mm. together. So preventive is a long-term approach, cure mm. is a short-term approach. And unfortunately, most of the water management mm. today are on mm-hmm. cure approach. And you know why? Because using technology and science is much easier than changing people's behavior. Nobody wants to
yes,
bell the cat.
So true.
Nobody wants to get the education installed in primary mm-hmm. to PhD, because that takes a longer process than putting up a machine and cleaning the water body. Then I'm not against those things. We mm. need those things, but then we do not have proponents of knowledge. We do not have proponents of sound research. We do not have proponents of sound mm. policy. Mm. What happens is the proponents of actions who are mm. doing these things, they become the boss of proponents of research and policy. And in a way, the policy is written in such a way, the projects are written in such a way, or project funds are given in such a way, that more and more energy is invested in cure approach. To give an example, in any project, less than 10% money is used in social awareness. And I have come to an understanding from my 30 years of learning about water. If you are putting up a project on water, give 50% of money on social awareness. Long-term changing behavioral impact. 50% money you use for technology, for cure. So prevention and cure are not going to happen separately, you know. They have to be taken together. So if a company is working on wastewater management, the same company has to also talk about how to reduce production of wastewater, which is not happening. So we are unfortunately in water management also in that rat race of doing panacea approach. Ki ye karna hai, ye karte chale jana. Because human subject is difficult to work upon. We don't want to change ourselves, you know, and that's why I use the word, who is going to bell the cat? So people do not want to take this subject as a subject of work. And that is where I am so much convinced that if we cannot work on people directly, the only way to bring a change in people is by education.
Very, very important, I think. And sometimes we also don't understand what education means. It's not just about going to a class and taking lessons. You know, there's much more to it than that.
Much more. That is education for employment, what you said. And I'm saying education for enlightenment. I mean, education for enlightenment has to be the way of looking at it.
Just a thought. How do we prepare ourselves for, you know, any future challenge that might arise, that will arise out in water sustainability?
Yes, there are very easy ways, by the way, and I wish to bring out the example of corona here. Start imagining if corona was a waterborne disease, and that's a very good fear factor to start thinking to bring a change in oneself. You know? And it is definitely possible. And the only mantra to do is reduce your needs. Start questioning how much do I need, you know, on day one. And because if I inherit that habit in myself, I bring that habit to the boardroom, bring that habit to the policy document, you know. So I think for future, one has to redefine lifestyle and occupation. One has to rethink how much they can keep wasting. And simple formula. You use 4 liters of water to drink, you excrete and urinate that 4 liters. And that applies to every product we use. You know? So if we can reduce our needs, and if there is a crisis in the future, you will have lesser need anyways. So you can manage with that. That's individually. But I think the bigger concern for future will be things that may not be at individuals' hands. Directly, but indirectly, yes. And that is emerging pollutants, you know. And emerging pollutants are very strange kind of chemicals which are coming into water for which we still do not have decoded how to treat them. And that's not an everyday pollution which can be treated. So very, you know, jiddi bolte hain, jiddi daag ke jaise jiddi bacterias and pollutants. And mind you, during corona, in my city, in Sabarmati River, IIT Gandhinagar scientists actually found coronavirus in water. So I would like to scare people from your platform that we are not far from having more viruses, more bacteria, more water problems in future if we do not change our behavior. If we do not stop using all those chemicals in our homes, all those, you know, strong soaps in our homes. What you can do is reduce your consumption first. You may not have alternatives in the market, I understand. But if we can reduce our consumption, as I was giving example of coffee, a person who drinks a coffee one day, I drink it in 7 days. You know, it's not light. Because I have to drink coffee. That's my requirement, let's say. You know, my need. As if I will survive without coffee. But I have developed a bad habit. You know, so I have to change myself. So I'm changing in a way that I'm using 1 day of coffee in 7 days or 10 days. You know, just to fool myself, but at the same time being conscious of my consumption. So that is something which one can do, because that habit will come to the policy discussion. So when I'm sitting in a policy discussion, I'm bringing these things up. So how to reduce, how to change people's behavior. I think one thing which we all have to understand is water management is people management. The water that is outside in the rivers, in the lakes, in the ponds, is the same water that is inside. It is one water. We are not talking about two different water. And I love to say this line many a times in my public speaking: the water in the drain is also the water in the brain. So you have to know this relationship and understand the stage of mental well-being in the society. We are in serious mental crisis, and we are in serious wastewater crisis. You know, so there is a spiritual connection. There is also a physical connection with the water outside. So if the water outside is dirty, the chemical inside is also dirty.
So
we have to clean the water both ways. You know. So I think it is possible, and you have to take a baby steps, first for yourself, then for your people around, especially family members. Go really after them to bring a behavioral change. Then you can look at community.
So inspiring, and it just opened up my perspective. And I say this because I always think and I say, I really want to be a part of whatever initiatives you are doing and contribute, ma'am, because this is so important. For me, I think the biggest challenge we face, and I keep saying this again and again in every episode, and as I said, that this podcast is an extension of who I am. I believe that our climate, our planet, the way we live and the way we conduct ourselves is the single biggest threat we have. Rest of them are all created by us. All the wars, all the fight to
humanly constructed. Wars are man-made. Let me be a little bit gendered here. Wars are man-made.
Yes. that's just, I there's something which I always say, because I truly believe it, ma'am, and that is that, and I think when we first had the conversation before I invited you to the podcast, I had said that there truly is no climate justice without economic justice.
Absolutely.
And I think technology definitely plays a key role in trying to bridge, if we use it the right way, to bridge a lot of economic injustices. Yes. When it comes to water, you know, we hear terms like smart water systems, IoT playing an important role in improving water infrastructure. Can you, so for me, as I said, that equitable access comes from technology, because if the less the marginalized group of people who really need, if technology can help bridge that gap, it's great. Can you list out, or do you have some kind of a list or something in terms of what are the emerging technologies you believe can or will revolutionize water management in the next decade?
There are plenty. Thanks for asking this question, Santosha, because I think we cannot shy away from use of technology now, definitely. And especially when we are talking about, putting water management for the vulnerable community. Having said that, I mean, I wish to bring this example here of a cup of water or coffee. This is a limited water. So if technology allows us to really put a cap on how much one can use, and that is also for rich people and poor people, I think we can really understand who requires what. See, our national policy or constitutional right allows me 135 liters per day, per person. On an average, an urbanite, I'm not talking about class. An urbanite gets 80 liters per day per person, averaging it out. A rural person gets 50 liters per day. So we already see urban-rural divide here, right? So that that is also the gift of technology, by the way, because the water from rural area is brought to the urban areas for our consumption, and we have embraced urbanization. Let us accept that. So, but if you look into the grains of urban areas, the grains of urban area goes from 20 liters to even 20,000 liters per capita. So given this situation, because you asked a simple question, I have to set up the reference of it. You know, given this situation, a poor person barely gets 20 liters to a rich or rich person even uses more than 20,000 liters of water. And the dynamics, the economics is completely opposite. A rich person and a middle class pays much lesser per liter of the water vis-a-vis a poor person paying more than 20 times per liter of the water. Given this situation, what technology can do, we do have many of these techniques to treat wastewater. We have many techniques to check, you know, water quality, you know, to check TDS. Now these are even handy tools which are there. We have techniques to clear arsenic, fluoride, and all those chemicals which are there. We have all those many startups and many patented things. We also have, I'm working with one of my funder who is producing water from air, Aeroniro. You know, I know a person who is right now using the most economic water purification system and Watson Limited, just giving some examples, because you seek examples. And that's the cheapest water purifier right now available in the country. And I feel happy that both are my friends. So I'm happy to promote their work as well. And the candles can be also very easily changed in Watson. So there are people who are working. I have another friend and co-founder of W4W Foundation, Ganesh Shankar from Fluxgen Limited and from Bangalore. They are doing industrial metering to help industries, IoT-based systems to monitor their water consumption. You understand how beautiful that is. You know, because if they are monitoring the water consumption, they are also monitoring the wastewater production. You know, so they are helping industries, big industries. He has his projects. Fluxgen has their projects to reduce their water use for their product. You know, to optimize. So to give an example here from smaller scale, I know Sufia Khan has developed from Vanasthali University. She developed very small candles which you put in your glass and you can actually extract the fluoride and arsenic out of it. So likewise, there are many examples which are available. My worry is on the water resource part of it, because much of these technologies are again anthropocentric for humans. And my concern and forte lies in the resource management side of it. Because for me, water is not for humans alone. And water is for everybody. And I think we are short of technologies there. I think we are short of effort there, because we have now started a race of existence of humans versus others. And that's the worst race we have put ourselves into. And after dam, you know, and canal irrigation system, we have not had much technological innovations in water resource management. You know, I mean, we do have water supply system in cities where the city water comes to our city, then put in the treatment plant and then distributed to the city and all. But then some rationing. Water metering is a very good technological advancement, I will say. But how many cities are agreeing to put the water meter? How many houses are manipulating the water meters where it has been put? Hyderabad has been a little bit successful in putting some water meters. Delhi has been a little bit successful, but not other cities in the country. So we are not short of technology, Santosh. Let me just put it that way. What we are short of is embracing, you know, inclusivity, both between humans. So we are in a fight between, you know, the haves and the have-nots, and also between humans and other creatures. See, we are now 96% of beings, humans and cattle, are 96% of the beings on planet. And cattle means farming. They have to consume grass. That takes a lot of water. Then we have our aspirations. We are producing more waste than we can consume. So we need water for our consumption, for everything. And then we end up producing waste. So I think the three major planetary crises today we have is climate change, of course. I don't know how much we can attribute it to anthropogenic activities. But yes, it has I think, fastened the climate change. But water pollution is a serious problem. So waste and water pollution is a serious planetary crisis, and the biodiversity loss that the planet is for humans has to change, has to really change before we are late. And I feel good that people talk about bees now, people talk about ants now, you know, people talk about elephants and tiger, Project Tiger is there. But we have to really have more technological advancement for changing biodiversity status, changing water pollution status, because climate change is that big elephant in the room.
Let me come to the final question of this segment, because I want to just move towards your personal future goals. Like, what are your long-term goals for water management and sustainable development in India? I know you've been doing tremendous amount of work, but do you have some goals which you feel 5 years, 10 years down the line? And I know that you're not big on listing down things, but in general, because, you know, sometimes we draw inspirations from people around us. So maybe your future goals might inspire a whole bunch of young people or individuals in general. I think one thing I've realized interacting with people from different age group is there is no single age for changing. You can change and you can make a difference at any age. Anyhow. So if you could share your long-term goals, or, you know, which might actually inspire other individuals to take up. And they may not hold a PhD, or they may not be completely entrenched into water the way you are. But if they can take something, some bites, some lessons from your future goals, that would be wonderful.
You remind me of a recent interaction I had with the U.S. Embassy, and they profiled me in April. And this question was also asked by Zahul. I think I really am challenged to set up long-term goals. I live by day. That is my limitation. And you may say it is because of the way the profession of water is, the challenges I have faced in my career, a career built out of many failures. So I also, as an individual, I am a strong believer that there is no tomorrow for me. I'm a strong believer. So I really wish to live every day. But having said that, I think after 30 years, I am better positioned to answer this question as I was 30 years ago as young, because that time also I had the same belief, to be honest. Otherwise, I would have really looked for a cushion job, being topper in the class and very good marks, and all my education time and abroad also, always my mentors asked me, would you like to stay back? Because I make a good social person. So they would ask, would you like to stay back and look for work? Why not? Having studied in Cambridge, still wanted to come back to India, studied and lived in many parts of the world, and still wanted to come back to India and work. Something which got much more clarity after 30 years is that jis mitti se bane hain, usi mitti mein to wapas jana hai, to kyun na usme uske jitne paas reh sake. So every day I have this little desires, you know, to walk barefoot on the soil, to feel it. And jaise kahin pani dikh raha hai, uchhalta hua ya girta hua, to usme naha liya. And I did that today morning as well. Pani ko nal ka chhod ke chala gaya tha car wash mein. तो मैं बंद करने गई तो थोड़ा अपने ऊपर डाल दिया एंड आई फील सो हैप्पी डूइंग दीज लिटिल थिंग्स. बाहर डॉगीज है तो उनके साथ थोड़ा खेल लिया, देख लिया. सो डूइंग दीज थिंग्स समहाउ कंज्यूम लॉट ऑफ माई एनर्जी एंड टाइम एंड आई हैव नॉट रियली सैट थ्रू टू डिसाइड वॉट इज गोइंग टू हैपन टुमारो एंड वॉट शुड माई प्लान बी. बट there are some short term projects as in the research projects which I do and education and I really wish to live a day before I disappear from this planet. That probably you can consider as my long term goal, that water is taught. My concern today is that water is not taught beyond H2O. We have to move beyond H2O. Water is not H2O. There is much more to water. We are part of it. So I really wish that there are more and more schools, colleges and universities where water can be taught. And of course, if I can go and teach them, I also get a little bit of livelihood. By the way, that is going to be my livelihood because applying for research grants is a really, I will say, tiring exercise. And with my age now going up, and up, I can focus less on writing research proposal. I still wish to write, I write. But I think if it can be taught at most of my known colleges, I think my wish to stay afloat or my wish to have a livelihood out of water can be sufficed. I am not seeking anything more than that, to be honest. I'm very contented person in whatever I achieve and achieve. And I think being that content also helps me to drift away from the rat race. So I think the biggest decision I made in my own career and life in the beginning, or probably because I was rebel, is that I'm not going to do what everybody does. I'm going to find out happiness out of whatever I do. So I have never been unhappy with my work ever, even if there are challenges. So I think for me, the biggest achievement will be to stay healthy and happy. 50 plus, no medicines. No medicines. And still going okay, So for me, the utmost requirement to live long, not that I wish to, but will be that I stay healthy and happy and I would like to do what I wish to do. If you do not accommodate me in your system of work, at least do not disturb me. Let me do my little bit. It's like this ants and those, worms who are making these little homes and here and there. Please do that. I mean, because end of the day, I would like to answer myself. Did I spend my day well? But I, if I look at my 30 years of working like an ant or a bee, I feel, if I look back, I think I did enough as a humanly possible work. And not that I am done with it. I really want to go double the speed and achieve many things in terms of changing people's behavior. If I can change behavior of people of my house, I think the biggest achievement will be that. And that is a work in progress.
Amazing, amazing conversation. And with that, we come to the end of the second segment. So, Mansi ma'am, we are coming to the final segment of our podcast, which is the rapid fire questions. We've kind of broken up the rapid fire questions into three parts. This or that, fun and interactive, and the last part of our rapid fire is thought-provoking questions. So, we will begin with this or that. The first question: rainwater harvesting or greywater recycling?
Greywater recycling.
Okay. Although it's a rapid fire, if you want to expand, you can, ma'am.
Yes.
Urban green spaces or rooftop gardens?
Urban green spaces, anytime, million times.
Sustainable architecture or renewable energy?
Both, no. Please give me the third option.
Okay. Freshwater lakes or groundwater wells?
Both. Give me the third option again.
Okay, I'll be mindful of this for future conversations.
Both.
Biophilic design or minimalist design?
minimalist.
Water efficient appliances or water recycling systems?
Water recycling systems.
We move to the next segment within the rapid fire segment, fun and interactive set of questions. If you could visit any historical site to study its water management system, where would it be and why?
Vijayanagaram. Definitely Vijayanagaram. Of course, there are many other places one can visit. But the entire kingdom was so well arranged with water management in terms of its aqueducts. We also have one in Patan here, but it was late to restore. So if one has to learn how to integrate wells, aqueducts, rivers, ponds, tanks, it's the place to visit.
What's the most fascinating thing you have learned about water management in your research?
Can I be a little bit more, you know, you satire me here? Okay. The most fascinating thing for me is that people are so hell-bent to manage water and they just want to pretend not to manage people. And for me, that is the funniest thing. We don't want to manage ourselves. We want to manage water.
And by the way, ma'am, this is a fun and interactive session, so you can be as, you know.
Okay. I forgot that part.
Yes.
So I can.
If
be.
You had a.
So please don't manage water. Just manage yourself.
So such a powerful statement.
वो बोलते हैं ना हिंदी में अपनी धोती संभालना बहुत जरूरी है. So that applies to humans.
If you had a superpower to solve one water issue instantly, what would it be?
Oh, I would like to have that power, please. I would like to have water education, not do anything on water again, but have water education, primary school, middle school, high school, bachelor's, master's, MPhil, PhD, water as a subject, not studying water in chemistry as H2O and somewhere else. A subject just like chemistry, subject just like history, water as a subject, few credits. But definitely, clearly, at all levels of education. If I could do that, and I don't think I need a magic wand for that. I just need the ministry in my hand. Ministry of Education, not Ministry of Water.
If you could describe your mission in 3 words.
Water education. I don't need 3 words. I need 2 words.
Okay.
Water education will anyway lay the foundation of water management. Let me just start, Saris. Let me just add 2 more words. So, water education, and I think more than that, water conversations.
What's your favorite book, if any, on sustainability or water management?
Very difficult to describe this. Huh? I would not like to name one book here to really underscore. That book and also undervalue other books. But maybe the book that changed my way of looking at things, that's Anupam Mishra, Mishra's Aaj Bhi Khare Hai Talab. So Gandhian from the Peace Foundation in Delhi and is no more. But I think that little book changed the way I looked at things. And then Dying Wisdom from Anil Agarwal and Sunita
Dying Narayan. Wisdom.
And I'm talking about 30 years ago, by the way.
Okay, so I'm sure this book would be worth a shot for everyone who really cares for our planet, cares for water.
Yes, and it's available. Good thing is it is available online, free to download. At least Aaj Bhi Khade Hai Talab is free to download also in Hindi and English both.
I would absolutely do that. What's the most memorable feedback you have received from a public speaking event?
Recently, actually, I think I can use the recent one, but many, to be honest, because I have been speaking at various public platforms. आप लोगों को डांटती बहुत अच्छा है और ताकि उनको समझ में आए. But I think my intention has always been to reach people's heart, or I will say prick, put a little pin there, you know. And that's where I use lot of statistics. I mean, or backed by science, but I try to decode the science in simple language and really use very strong words so that people feel it. So my target is here, not here.
Absolutely.
So one of the bureaucrats who was the, in seated in my recent speech, he said, "Aap daatti bahut acha."
And it's commendable coming that from a bureaucrat, you know. If you could collaborate with any global environmentalist, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's a very good question. But again, just like book, it is extremely difficult for me to answer one person because I strongly believe that water management is a collaborative work, and we are doing that work through W4W Foundation, reaching out to as many people as we can and running the longest water conversation as this at this point in time. So it's extremely difficult to really name one person. But if it was, again, and that person is again no more, and I would have loved to work with Anil Agarwal ji.
Whose book you mentioned with Sunita Ramanji?
Yes, The Dying Wisdom. Yes. Dying Wisdom, second
I'm
one.
So, actually,
because I, when I started my career, he was at his, I will say, a very well-known person. And for me, Anupam Mishra was far reaching person, you know, because he is legend. He was legend. So I could feel Anil Agarwal ji as accessible. So I have huge respect for him. I would have loved to work with
Wonderful. What's one water-saving habit you wish everyone would adopt?
Extremely important. Actually, just start using less water for everything. Everything, whether it is washing dishes, washing vegetables, fruits, bathing. And I think in every activity, we can save around 30% to 40%. That's my take. And I have assessed it in my own life. So it's not on the tap, everywhere. And the fact that people use sink for washing fruits and vegetables, if we can get rid of it, or at least have a bowl below, when we wash our clothes, at least make sure that the water is reused. So that's extremely important. So if there is one habit, if we can reuse the water for second use, that will be extremely useful, which people have to understand. The more we use fresh water, the more we produce wastewater. So our target has to be to reduce production of wastewater. So it's like a cyclic process.
So we come to the final segment of the rapid fire segment. We call it thought-provoking conversations. So first one is, how do you see the role of youth in addressing water management issues in India?
Oh, I think they have the biggest responsibility now in in two ways, to be honest. My generation has screwed everything. So let us be honest on that. So they have to take charge and first of all, start stopping a lot of things which are happening still wrong in the society. So I will strongly believe that if youth can take the very way I used to look at life in my youth, young days, as you know, questioning everything, having that rebellious nature, that little bit of aggression of if something is happening wrong, they have to stand up. They have to literally stand up, and that applies to water as well. And I give classic example to especially my fellow professional youth, please do not contribute to any lake development and any riverfront development because it's a crime. It's a heinous crime. It's a murderous activity. I'm sorry I'm using these words, but my emotions are now out. But youth have to really stand up to say no to wrongdoings. And I think they have the courage to do that as compared to my generation. And they have to also look for alternates. It's not that there is no alternates. The thing is, people like us who have not received those big awards, big names, big projects in the background, it becomes extremely difficult for us to convince youth. But when I'm talking to them one-to-one, I do a lot of youth mentoring. I do realize that they understand. So youth have to do peer mentoring as well as they have to look for good mentors to really bring a change. Otherwise, they may go through the climate change with a little bit of rough life, but their children and grandchildren are going to have serious problem. One may not be able to see grandchildren, children from at this point in time, but it is going to come in their lives. You know, they have to work for them.
What has been the most challenging part of advocating for water conservation in urban areas?
Oh, that's a list I can fill up as a book, you know. It's a huge challenge to even go across and talk about water education. See, there are two things in water. Water resource management, so basically doing something mm-hmm. physically. And another thing is managing the knowledge of mm-hmm. water resource. And unfortunately or fortunately, in my opinion, unfortunately, we have a lot of proponents mm-hmm. of action. You know, if somebody is digging a well, somebody is clearing a lake, there are a lot of people to pat at the back, and awards and everything follows up. So to that extent, we have gone to really giving them, big awards, lakefront development, riverfront development. But the proponents mm-hmm. of knowledge are undermined. Mm. The value of knowledge is not really appreciated. We do not realize that any development is backed by the knowledge which people receive from somewhere. Somebody is producing the knowledge, somebody is gathering the knowledge, somebody is putting it across for you. But unfortunately, in our society, this is more in India, but across the world also is in case of water, there are serious, serious problems of getting acknowledgement and appreciation for knowledge management of the water sector. I'm not saying that I need everybody should get award and appreciation, but the fact that somebody has to produce the knowledge. How could we know about Vedanta, Mahabharata, or Ramayana, or Quran, or Bible, if somebody has not written it? You know, so someone has to do the research, and someone has to also document how society is conducting itself. And someone has to decode it, put it into simple words, and bring it across to the society. Unfortunately, our society is not ready to accept that as a work. You know, so people like me really find it challenging even to find work. I will be very honest on that. And then for me, a bigger challenge than this has been, one part is this research, which I call research. Another part is that educating about water. So when I came back to India, I really wanted to teach anything and everything around water. So I have designed my own courses, many courses for that matter, around water, how to research water, and so on and so forth, women and water. And when I go and seek some accommodation in institutes through friends, by the way, known friends, because there's no other way being an independent. First of all, they do not understand many a times that whether this education is required in the courses. And then also many a times it's, time, abhi isme humare is pe jagha nahi hai. So I have been extremely challenged to teach and learn water education. For myself also, I'm not a water expert. Unfortunately, people look at me as a water expert. I would really like to be known as a research method person. You know, I'm not expert at all in any subject, but I love research method. And that means how to study something, how to document something, how to disseminate the knowledge. That's my interest area. And the thing is, because I'm doing it on water, people consider me as water expert, but I am not a water expert. So
that's very modest of you, ma'am.
No, it's really, I have not been educated in water. I'm just trying to dig knowledge about water, dig deeper about it to understand what people are doing, how people are doing like this, why people are doing like this, what do they know about it, how did they come to know about it, which education, which college. So I really keep mining where water knowledge is disseminated and try to understand, because I have no degree in water, but having degrees in different things and studying water from various angles, I could understand, I will say, an ounce of water, a drop of water. But then if I want to really expand that drop and share it with others, there is no platform in this country. Literally, let me give example of architecture planning schools where my basic qualification is. There's not even a one credit course in architecture planning schools across the country. So when I go with my courses, which range from 1 day to 1 year, by the way, 1 day, 1 month, 1 week, 1 semester, 1 year, I have designed the courses on water depending on, and it's written course. By the way, I have written the whole pedagogy. When I share it with people, I don't know, it goes to cold boxes or those dustbins or no response. And I feel a bit disturbed about it, because we cannot change water management if we do not change water education. And best of the universities are closing their water centers because they are not getting admissions. So we have even less than a two-digit water institutes in the country. I don't have the fortune to teach at all of them, but I teach at Terry Saas, which is in Delhi, and I did teach at TIS Hyderabad some time ago, and Central University Rajasthan. But it's, you know, they try it out for one semester, and it's also about employability and all. They don't, I don't know what happens, but architecture planning, they have been really sanitizing themselves from water education. And for me, it is the biggest challenge in my career. Not that I want to make a career out of it. My career is doomed, but at least water crisis has to be dealt with, you know. Mera kitna umar hai? Jada nahi hai meri umar ab jada. But I may not be facing the crisis, but at least I am concerned about it.
Mera aur Abid sir ka wo episode dekha hai, micro podcast, he shared something very interesting from a book by Deepak Chopra, where he said हमें ऐसा लगता है कि एज हैज नॉट बीन डिफाइंड. ही सेड अ टर्टल हैज 400 इयर्स, हाथी का 150 साल है, एंड ही सेड इंसानों का 120 साल है. अब होता यह है कि हम 120 साल तक रह सकते हैं इफ वी एक्चुअली टेक केयर ऑफ योर आवर बॉडी एंड माइंड, ईटिंग राइट.
Absolutely.
I'm sure there is still a long way to go for 120, man. So we need you.
Not that I wish to, but the thing is, what pani sharir mein bhi to pani hi hai na, and bahar ka pani saaf rahega to andar bhi saaf rahega to number hi jayenge usme kya.
How do you measure the impact of your work on ecological restoration and water management? Is there any way you measure the work? Koi methodology hai kuch?
Now your grilling is going to start. Do you need to measure? Because that's a very corporate way of doing things. And I would like to remind the fact from Gita. Karma kiye ja, phal ki chinta mat kar. So I am like the turtle, you know, who is just working. I don't know whether there is impact or not. And I am also not interested to measure. I don't know to measure. And I am not interested to measure the impact, because I don't think I'm doing anything extraordinary, to be honest. I'm trying to change myself to reduce my consumption and produce lesser waste, both solid and liquid waste. And whatever is humanly possible in 24 hours, I just try to teach and learn for myself. Sometimes scream also at people when I cannot control. So I think after some time people will start calling me mad in that way. Ki pani dekhte hi kuch na kuch bolne ka iska man karta hai. I have no clue if people hear and think and understand what I'm trying to convey in my communications, you know. But I'm doing my best to do that, because I think mujhe apna karm karna hai.
What advice would you give to someone wanting to pursue a career in ecological research?
Please come. We need more. We need more. We are minority. We are serious minority. I mean, we use the word in very different way in the country, unfortunately. But water workers, I don't like the word warriors, because I don't like wars. Much of the wars in the world is around water. People don't realize that. So water workers really need more people. That's as simply put. The more we are, I think the more we will be able to convince more people to take care of water, take care of themselves. So we need more brotherhood and sisterhood in the sector, more complementarities, more collaborations than more competitions in career. So please come over. Whether you like it or not, in future, water careers will be thriving. It may not be thriving today. There's a serious issue of employability. But I don't see people can really get away with not working on water in future. I mean, if you will have problem, either you go the Darwinism way, fight it out and for your survival, or you take it as a profession and really try to solve some of the things which is possible in your capacity.
I think
whether it is education, whether it is physical, and we need more and more and more water workers. I have no doubts on that. I mean, we have so many people playing cricket. We have so many people joining film. I don't know why they are doing these things. I mean, I don't see any value additions, so please don't mind. But they are also misleading the country and the youth mm-hmm. in many ways, especially with their ugly advertisements. And I will refer to only water advertisements. And I think if we want to change that thing, every house has to talk about water with the same spirit as they talk about Bollywood and cricket. I'm giving these two examples because I get extremely disturbed how irresponsible those players and actors are towards mm. their environment. So I have to give this example. And unfortunately, we are not in competition with them, but then we don't get people to listen about the serious issue. And a simple example is look at the followings. Social media following of those people who are selling something bad, who are selling something not so useful for the society, just for that altruism. We have more fashion institutes in this country than water institutes. And for me, that is the, sorry, I'm coming to my natural me now. Huh? So I feel bit, I have to control my
emotions. I'm glad I'm able to bring out that.
Yes. For me, you have to really see my mouth and the root there. For me, this is the biggest embarrassment that we have more fashion institutes in the. Not that I'm against fashion. I'm wearing something very beautiful, secondhand, by the way. But we cannot have less water management institutes. Come on, youth. I mean, what will you do with all those education if there is no fresh water mm-hmm. and fresh air? How will you ensure? I mean, going abroad is not the answer. You know, most of my generation devils are doing this evil business of hoarding money to send their children abroad to study something so that they can make their career. How will we get fresh air and fresh water in my country when we are sending so many things outside, you know? So, and even we are sending our people outside, especially the youth. Please don't go anywhere. Stay here, work on environment, work on water. This is a beautiful land and we have to really restore it. We have destroyed it so much. And I want to take this moment to really apologize to the younger generation and the children. My generation and my parents' generation have really done a lot of wrong things. Importantly, value-based wrong things. That we have to hoard money to secure future. No, we have to restore the environment for fresh air and fresh water. There is also money in this sector. I also want to convey this to you. I am not starving in 30 years. Yes, I am maybe earning less than my friends, but I am happy every day. Happier than my fat earning money friends, by the way. I wish I had some time to describe some of the examples where I have friends in big companies, big positions, and I never see them happy. You know, so if you are with environment, especially with water, trust me, you don't have to invest in happiness. There is no cost for happiness. You are naturally happy because, after all, we are born for a purpose, and that purpose is so closely attached to nature. That purpose is so closely attached to be with other beings. It may be human beings. It may be other beings. The moment you are physically with beings, you know, you feel that your purpose of life is getting solved.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you can understand it much better than me when you have left a good work and starting to really speak your heart and speak your head. There will be a point in time in everybody's life. Youth is a very short period of life. Sooner you realize that money cannot solve the purpose of life.
This particular conversation has struck a chord with me because I remember I had to return back from the US. I had come down because of my father's health at that point in time. And he's no more with us, but he was fighting a battle. And for whatever reasons, my mother said that, stay back. Ruk ke dekho kya hota hai. And I'm so glad I heard her. I listened to every word of her.
See, maa ki awaaz hai, huh? Mothers can never be wrong.
For the first time,
because they think from here.
When I wanted to go, she said, "Jao, career banalo." But when I came back this time, it was 2018. My father passed away December 2017.
I'm so sorry to hear this.
Yeah, all the values I have, he's my hero always. He's there. He would always tell me that you should take a broadcasting career. And I would say, "Papa, I don't think I can do that." And today I'm doing podcasting, and my mom reminds me every single day, "Dekho, Papa kehte the." And she told me, "Don't leave, because we need really people with your kind of passion." I am not saying this as a mother. I'm saying this as a citizen of this country, that we need people like you to be there.
She's manifestation of Mother India, by the way.
She is in many ways. And she said, "Stay back and you will not regret one single moment of it." And I'm so happy to be back and doing what I'm doing. I feel the stories I bring. And there are times when my mom calls me and says, "I see other podcasts and they have celebrities on the show and they have so many more likes than your podcast has." But she said, "Don't worry about it. I'm glad you are doing what you want to do, because at the end of the day, you are reaching out to people. You're talking about issues." She said, "All the likes and followings will come, because this generation."
And why should we look for them? That's my point also.
So I'm so glad, because it struck a chord, whatever you just said now. And I'm more motivated than ever. So on that front, another question: how do you stay motivated when faced with the challenges of water conservation?
Oh, it's an everyday battle, huh? Everyday battle. Trust me, Santosh, it's a really everyday battle. But I think if I have to give a tangible answer to it, yoga helped me a lot to keep a balanced head, heart, and rest of it. But work-wise, I am really looking at every day and thinking there is so much work left. You know, I have to do so much. I have to do this. And you may call it a disease, psychosomatic. But I get up every morning thinking that there is so much work I have to do, you know, without even thinking that I failed last night. I failed yesterday. And I'm failing every day. But I think for me, that's not important. Important is that I rise every morning with the hope that I want to do something, whatever humanly possible little thing. And you will be surprised to know that majority of my time these days goes in youth counseling. And I did not choose it. It happened. You know, I'm a good listener and I love to listen and learn rather than speaking. All the people call me for speaking, but I prefer to listen and learn more. So I'm reading a lot and listening to a lot of people, from personal counseling to professional counseling. All kinds of counseling happen with me. And I think when I listen to people, when I learn about whatever apathy they carry with themselves, I am constantly reminded that failing is part of life. We should not shy away from it. We have to embrace it. And very similar to the way we look at water, let me just use it here as a metaphor. Looking at wastewater, we should not be really avoiding it, and we should not be, keeping it away. And we have to realize that it is all one water. The wastewater comes back to us as a fresh water. And this realization is not there. So there is a process. You know, you have to correct the process of wastewater and bring it back. And groundwater was doing it in the past by itself. And I think that kind of understanding that there is now, means subah hai to raat bhi hogi, raat hai to subah bhi hogi. Similarly, I think fail ho rahe hain to kabhi kabhi achhi cheeze bhi milti hai. Like this conversation happening, you would not have come to me if I was not doing an ounce of little things here and there. You would not have come to know that I'm doing something. So these small interactions, this small patting, I'll say this is a small pat on my back, are highly motivating. You know, this conversation today can keep me going for next 1 month at least. I'm constantly sitting and thinking about futuristic ideas. And I submit my proposals. I don't get them. I'm also evaluator in many areas, many competitions. So I know that my proposal may be in a weaker sense, but the idea of the proposal is not weak. You know, so I have to improve my writing. So that gives me a new challenge to write in different ways. There are many projects which have gone further to some extent, and then the funder is holding me back and things like that. But that does not stop me from thinking, you know. So for me, my biggest strength is that I'm constantly thinking how I can do things better than yesterday, whether it is project-wise, whether it is conducting myself. So it's a work in progress. You know, I want to be a better person than yesterday. No, that has to be an attitude, and that I apply in my work as well. अच्छा ये ऐसे नहीं हो पाया ठीक है ऐसे try करते हैं. Even yesterday I sent a proposal which I wrote 3 years ago and I was confirmed funding. I did not get a funding. So yesterday I recycled. I mean, I was working on it for some time. I recycled it and I resubmitted it. So I think that keeps me going, because I think मुझे नहीं लगता कि मेरे जीवन काल में जितना मैंने प्लान बनाया है मैं सब काम कर पाऊंगी. I write diary and I have pages of things I wish to write. Writing came to my career very late, because in architecture we were not taught to write, and I wish to write so many things. I'm sitting on 4 or 5 books, but I'm just unable to complete them. Because I want to bring all of them together. थोड़ा थोड़ा सबको एक एक percent बढ़ाती रहती हूँ. So काम तो बहुत है, करते रहो मन लगा के. तो इसलिए कभी bore ही नहीं लगता. मैं actually कभी free ही नहीं होती, because I have learned to keep myself busy. I am not dependent on anybody to make me happy. I'm not dependent on anybody to tell me what to do. You know, if there is nothing, I'll just open my silai machine and start stitching. You know. If there's nothing, I will cook extra dish. I mean, if there is nothing. So, and also I do my whole domestic chores. So that also keeps me busy. And when I'm cooking, I love to see, I love to imagine, ki achha, ye turai hai, aaj turai bana hai ghar mein, by the way. To ye kaise hoga, uska ped kaise hoga, isme pani kitna. So I really get into those dreams about those vegetables when I'm cooking. पानी कितना लगा होगा शहर देश के किस कोने से आया होगा किसान ने कैसे किया होगा कितने में बेचा होगा मुझे इतने में मिला. सो दिस होल थिंग इज रनिंग अराउंड इन माय हेड. सो इफ आई डोंट शेयर दीस थिंग्स टू मेनी पीपल बिकॉज़ पीपल विल थिंक आई एम पागल. बट थिंकिंग इज माय स्ट्रेंथ एंड आइडिएशन इज माय डबल स्ट्रेंथ. आई विल से आई एम कांस्टेंटली थिंकिंग व्हाट न्यू कैन बी डन टू डू समथिंग एक्स्ट्रा अबाउट वाटर सेक्टर. एंड इट्स ऑल अबाउट वाटर बाय द वे. You give me a small problem in your life, I will find out a way how to link it with water. I'm so diseased with water matters.
That's you've just opened up.
You see, I already got charged. That tells me how motivated I stand.
What role do you think technology can play in solving water scarcity issues?
This is a big debate that goes in the water sector. Yes, technology is important, required. In fact, we started screwing water matters with technology only. And big dams are a classic example of it. But I will not shy away from saying that they are now inherent component of solving water crisis. For example, wastewater recycling cannot happen without technology. But wastewater reduction is a social part. Once that is created, you need a technology. So we are at a crossroad in a society where I think technology and social cultural aspects needs some marriage. And that is where water managers or water workers have to really think seriously about collaborations. Because in the past, water subject was more of an engineering subject, technological subject, science subject. It took many, many decades for us to think that water management needs a social behavior change, you know. So now we see a lot of people in the social science sector and all, and science and technology, I will say STEAM, not STEM,
yes.
So arts, you know. So STEAM, so arts, I'm adding arts there, and extremely important. So if technology, the thing is what it does is it takes the common people out of the system. In the sense, they get, koi aur specialist karega. But if we can find out some way of doing things now with IoT base and all, one of my proposals which I wrote for Marie Curie scholarship, which I did not get, was how IoT based system can really be initiated within our society, so that people start looking at their mobile and start thinking how they can change their behavior. Why not? If there is health system there, if there is Dream 11 of this stupid cricket game, why not something about water? So it is going to come handy, science and technology, and especially when we are talking about these days, AI is going to make AI for good. Let me just add AI for good. We need human intelligence more than tech intelligence. But we cannot shy away from its contribution to water management. Definitely required, but please not as a mechanical approach to it. So you produce more wastewater and you put bigger machine and STP is not my suggestion. I think we have to work on the prevention first, or put equal budget and money or effort on prevention, then on the cure side. Technology is more on the cure side. But technology can also help in changing social behavior.
True.
And there are a lot of innovations which have come into water systems there.
How can individuals support the mission of improving water management in their own communities?
So I have to first go to the quote of Gandhi, be the change you wish to see in the world. So first experiment on yourself, things. Then you know what you can expect to change in your family before going out in the community, because the problem which even technology-driven education in the past did to us, and this hi-fi education which I am also part of, we were told to go and change the society, where Veda told us to first work on changing yourself. Gandhi told us first to work on changing yourself. Let us accept ourselves as work in progress. Apply everything on oneself and then see how things can be changed. And I think the biggest change, if one wishes to do water management, one doesn't have to do much, actually. It's a very simple change you have to bring. Start reading about essentialism and minimalism. And if you stop buying, I think that's the biggest contribution. If you reduce your consumption footprint, you are anyway reducing the water footprint. I think this is the biggest change and possible change humans can do to themselves. You know, you cannot avoid drinking 4 liters of water. Please drink 4 liters of water. You are a house plant that needs that much of water. So we are a house plant, you know. So we need that 4 liters of water. You will require around 10 liters of water for your domestic other things. Then you are already consuming many liters of water through your fruits and vegetables and coffee. By the way, this is light coffee. The coffee which is drunk in a week by a person, in 1 day, I drink it for 7 days. So reducing the coffee shot. Because everything produced in this world has a water footprint. And that is not understood. And I will at this point also encourage everyone to have a water footprint app also on their mobile, as any other app, banking app, driving app, traveling app. But basically all these, TikTok apps and all these gamification apps are there. So why not have one more app and look at it through it? And it's bottom line, again, the mantra: reduce consumption of water to reduce production of wastewater. That has to be the mantra of water management at individual level, you know. And that, as I mentioned, it is, you cannot reduce your drinking water, domestic water. You have to reduce in other ways, you know, washing, buying. Most important, buying goods is the devil of our problems. Most of the solid waste and wastewater comes from the industrial production, which we aspire to have as goods. You know, so if we can reduce our greed and move back to some basic needs, I think you are doing the biggest contribution to water management. You don't need to go out and clean the lake every week and take a selfie out there that you cleaned the lake. You just don't go and litter the lake, you know. So that is also an important. You don't allow your family members to really litter. You can segregate waste. You can produce lesser wastewater. Use your wastewater for gardening. Do not use fresh water. All these things are possible, really possible. I wish, Santosh, you can find me somebody or you do it. I have been really thinking to do something like this for, like, you know, 5-minute podcast on what an individual can do on water management. I so much wish to do it, but I am technologically challenged.
I'm here. Let's do it.
So if we can do once a week mantra for an individual, what they can do at their own level, we can just you know, shoot 5 minutes and send it across to people. Like radio FM, radio FMs, you know, why not? And, you know, these things are possible by people. And if they can be conveyed through a very nice medium, very playful medium, people will understand that they can do it. You know, I think people are waiting for government to do something. And people are waiting for those large things to happen, to change. So if you ask people, they say, oh, government ko ye karna chahiye, government ko ye karna chahiye. Then you say, what aapko kya karna chahiye? They do not know what to do. And there's a theory called prisoner's dilemma here. Even if people know, it's a very famous microeconomic theory. Even if people know, they think ki mere akele karne se samaj thodi badal jayega. Kyunki mere padosi to nahi kar rahe na. Mere gharwale to nahi kar rahe. And this is something where we have to get out of prisoner's dilemma. Aap kariye, aapke jeevan ka purpose hai. Aapko apne aapko jawab dena hai jeevan mein. Dusre kare chahe nahi kare. Aapko karke dikhana hai. Aur shayad, agar aapne kiya, to aapko dekhke kuch log karenge. Classic example, mere ghar mein log mujhse darte hai nal jor se chalane ke liye. Kyunki nal jor se chala aur maine chillaya. Bhari dopahri mein pedon mein pani dalna. Aur fresh water dalna. Is a crime. Please don't plant trees if you cannot water them with your used water. Do not draw groundwater and plant trees, potted plant ho chahe trees, because you are actually creating bigger problem for yourself by drawing groundwater. Bore ka pani nikal ke agar ped laga rahe hain, you are doing no good for the society. No good for the environment. I think this has to come across, because many people think ki bahut ped lagane se bahut acha hoga. Nahi. All green is not good. All blue is good, by the way. Let me tell you, not that, because I practice water. If you save 1 acre of wetland or a water body, it is equivalent to saving 80 acres of forest. Can you imagine the relationship? People must know this relationship. You know? So not that you are going to make a pond or a forest by yourself, but drawing water and watering the plants and trees should be forbidden forever. And that is only possible when people come to know this relationship.
All right, ma'am. So we come to the end of the rapid fire segment. Mansi ma'am, thank you so much for being on this podcast. Thank you for supporting us, because your presence really helps us as a podcast to talk about important issues, because I started off this podcast because it's an extension of who I am and what I believe in. And when we have important, inspiring storytellers who come onto our podcast and share important stories, our platform gets the opportunity to carry these stories forward for a long time to come. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Santosh. Thanks a lot. You actually made me speak my heart, which is my always preferred mode, rather than giving a regimental or political answers, diplomatic answers. So I like this kind of conversations, and I'm a strong believer that conversations are crucial to conservation, and we seriously need water conservation. And for that, we need serious water conversations. And you have started this conversation, and I'm sure it is going to have a ripple effect on many more people to come.
And as Mansi ma'am said, for water conservation, we need a lot more water conversation. And Between Us podcast is about conversation. And the most important conversation is the one that we have with ourselves. And on that note, thank you all for tuning in. Stay safe, stay healthy.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Between Us podcast. This podcast was recorded at Manik Pod Studios in Chembur, Mumbai. Our sound engineer is Moinak Chakraborty, and our producers are Arnav Dogra and Santosh Kumar. Our associate producer is Samyak Kamble. The video for this episode was processed at Viewfinder's Edit. The Between Us podcast uploads episodes weekly, and we'll see you next time.